Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Dr. James Harder is with us, ladies and gentlemen. James is Chief Scientist for the Gallup Organization. You've heard of those guys. And he's authored a number of studies and works on the way people manage their businesses. He's been doing this for a long time. As I said, he is the chief scientist over at Gallup. And if you know anything about Gallup, you know that's a pretty important job. He's the co-author, along with Rod Wagner, who's been on this show before, talking about management with us, of the book 12, The Elements of Great Managing. James, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. To have you here. I'm always glad. And by the way, say hello to Rod for us when you talk to him. He was here in December and did a good job talking to us about the elements of management, of great management. And by the way, folks, it is a New York Times bestseller. James, I really like talking about management with small business owners because many small business owners, well, all small business owners are managing their businesses. They're just not always doing it well. And one of the things that I've observed in the years I've either been a small business owner or have worked with small business owners is that all of us need a little bit more sophistication. Maybe we don't, you know, sometimes we look at big companies and we think, you know what, we make decisions quickly around here. We don't have to have committees. And that is part of the charm and the efficiency of a small business. But there is a level of sophistication that we all need to rise to, a little bit more, a little bit higher level of sophistication. And I'd like for you to talk to us about that.
Well, you know, in our experience in studying great managers, they're sophisticated in kind of a unique way. They're sophisticated, and they've become that way. They didn't start this way. They became that way by dealing with people and kind of, in a way, becoming applied psychologists. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's easy for a lot of us who've been around business for a while to naturally think about people as machines, that we need to manage people almost like they're machines, when in fact the mathematics and the machinery kinds of formulas don't always add up when you're dealing with people. Mm-hmm. Not quite as formulaic, even though we've identified 12 elements. Great managers appeal to them in very unique ways and become very sophisticated about dealing with people. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Jim.
No, I was just going to say part of the sophistication, and I know this is some of the stuff you guys worked on. Of course, you know, when we talk about management, of course, there's management of the operation of the business, mm-hmm. and then there's management of the people. We really need to differentiate those two areas, don't we?
We really do. If we assume that people operate like the operational aspects of the business, then we really end up with some flawed ideas about how people really need to be managed.
Don't we need to really focus on that first word in HR, the human? I mean, isn't that a word? I actually like using that word. I use that word quite often. I don't talk about people. I talk about humans. And I think that sort of gets people's attention when you use that word. It lets them know that you're serious about these people.
Yeah, in fact, this book that we wrote it's really targeted toward managers, but it's really a book about human nature.
Mm-hmm.
It goes beyond the workplace as well. A lot of the principles do, but the human aspect has huge implications financially. Many people think that they're opposites. You know, that the people and the business part are opposites, when in fact, great managers get performance done while they make people's lives better. And, in fact, making their lives better improves their business in the long run.
Well,
less absenteeism, less turnover. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you found that there's an intangible rocket boost that a business can get when a manager finally finds out how to tap into the brain power and the energy and the commitment of their humans.
That's right, and a lot of it starts with listening to people, sitting down and listening to their situation. I just give you an example. Materials and equipment seems like kind of a boring element, but it's a huge cause of stress in the workplace because most people don't have the fine-tuned materials and equipment they need to do their work. It's not just a matter of buying people a bunch of stuff, which you think operationally, get everybody the same materials and they're going to be fine, but the minor adjustments that great managers make not only improve performance, but they reduce stress in the workplace considerably.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you when you studied these managers, what were some of the principles that you found that were common denominators that you felt were really really landmark discoveries with regard to working with human beings?
Well, you know, some that you might think are very basic are often overlooked. The most basic and overlooked area in management is just clarifying expectations. Only about half the people in the world clearly know what is expected of them at work. That might surprise you. But what great managers tend to do is they will help people identify the outcomes, and then they'll make those minor adjustments based on who that individual is to help them get to the outcome. But they won't overly legislate the steps because not everybody gets to the same outcome the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really good at identifying those outcomes. They also are very attuned to the differences in their people and helping each individual do what they do best. Now, I recognize in small business that's more of a challenge. That particular area is more of a challenge than it is in larger businesses, where if you do it right, you can continue to specialize as your organization grows.
Right. That doesn't happen in small business. We have too many hats to wear and not enough heads to put them on.
That's right. But the advantage in small business from everything I've observed, and in fact, engagement levels are higher in small businesses than they are in larger
Absolutely.
Positions.
Absolutely.
The advantage is the closeness with the people and the fact that you can really attune what you're doing to the individuals in a lot of ways by making their opinions count, connecting them to a mission or purpose. That's a big one in small business.
Well, there's no question about it. Napoleon said a soldier will fight long and hard for a bit of ribbon waving in the air in front of them. And mm-hmm. and that's the way it is in small businesses. And I really do think sometimes we take our employees for granted. We don't realize that, you know, they've chosen to be with us. They've chosen to be in a small business. There must be a reason there besides the fact that they want a paycheck. When we come back, I want to talk about two things with James. I want to talk about quality, and I want to talk about the generational issue. See if what they've talked about, what they've done about that in their research. It's 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. We'll be right back with Dr. James Harder. Back, it's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, a small business advocate. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. And I hope you'll check it out when you get a chance to use it to your advantage. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter and check out our blog while you're there as well. Dr. James Harder is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. That's H-A-R-T-E-R. He's chief scientist for the Gallup Organizational's International Workplace Management Practice. He's the co-author, along with Rod Wagner, of the book 12, The Elements of Great Managing. And James, one of the things I promised the audience I want to talk about with you when we came back was one of the things is quality, how to get quality work. And I have this little saying that I use, that I like to use when I give speeches, and I do it on my show quite often. And it's a thought that really resonates with people. I see it in their eyes, especially when I use it in speeches. And here it is: always seek excellence, not perfection. Isn't perfection the enemy of accomplishment of performance?
Well, you know, I think that that excellence is a great goal. Perfection is, depending on how you define. If you define perfection in an absolute sense, it's of course impossible to get to in most cases.
Exactly.
There's always error that enters in. Go ahead.
I was just going to say I've seen that before. I've seen people who who can't differentiate between excellence and perfection, and consequently, I mean, I've actually seen people who just couldn't accomplish anything because it was never perfect enough for them.
I think in the world of management, some managers try to seek perfection in managing their people, and again, it comes back to that trying to do it through process. But I'll tell you a secret if you promise not to tell anybody.
Okay, nobody else, just you and me.
Yeah, yeah. These managers that we had a chance to study around the world worried about how to manage people. The best managers were a bit scared about how to manage people.
Really?
They realized that people were messy, and it kind of speaks to your point.
Well, they're herd of cats,
aren't they? Perfect, and they can't expect people to be perfect, and they make those minor adjustments for each person. And I think part of that not taking people for granted and not expecting them to be perfect is part of why they're so successful.
Well, I think so, too. And see if you can see, in my opinion, perfection should be taken literally. I mean, it's a word. It's a thing that we know the definition of. Perfection is, you know, is perfect. And excellence can be defined a lot of different ways. My excellence might be a little bit less than your excellence, but it's still my excellence, and it's the best I can do, even though it may not be as good as what you can do. And isn't that the essence of managers learning how to know when somebody is doing the best they can and trying to be excellent, and working that way, dealing with that mess, as you called it?
Yeah, and I think the key point that you hit on there was that they make it unique to the person. They make that definition of what excellence is unique to the person by first listening to what that person wants to accomplish, and tying that into the business.
Another thing that this segues perfectly into, James, is the concept of quality.
Mm-hmm.
Where is quality today in the marketplace? You know, I came up in the ISO 9000 era. You know, I was involved in some of the quality initiatives, and you don't hear the word quality a lot, I don't think, in management anymore. Do you? Where is that nowadays?
I think quality has traditionally been thought of in terms of process efficiency and reducing variance in errors. But from customers' perspectives, the customers we've had a chance to survey, quality is pretty low on average. But engaged, when you build an engaged workforce, quality goes up from the people standpoint in terms of the people touching the customer and how they respond when they touch the customer. One of the ways that great managers think about quality, and this is a little different from the excellence example you gave, that they do recognize when they have slackers, and that when they have a slacker on their team, it brings down morale.
Right.
They hold people accountable. There have been numerous studies that show that when you let slackers slide, when you let them get by, when they're not doing pulling their weight, it really brings down morale and productivity.
The bad apple syndrome, right?
Yeah, yeah. Same with bunglers. Bunglers are people who work hard, but they don't have the ability. They bring down morale also, not quite as much, but they do bring down morale because they're in the wrong jobs.
What I see in a small business, we have small barrels. Our apple barrel is pretty small. But our apples are the same size as everybody is the big company apples. So that means that we got one bad apple, that's a higher concentration of problems for us.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Any thoughts on generational management? I've only got about 45 seconds. Uncover anything in especially managing the younger generation, the Gen Xers?
We found engagement's a bit higher for the traditionalists, the old, and the millennials. The Gen Xers, they do have opportunities to learn and grow, and their progress is more likely discussed than others, but their basic needs aren't met. The things I kind of highlighted earlier tend to be overlooked for Gen Xers a lot. They lack materials and equipment. They're a little bit more demanding in terms of materials and equipment, but part of it isn't just stuff as much as it is tailoring the stuff to them.
It's part of that mess you were talking about earlier, isn't it?
yeah, exactly.
Hey, James, will you come back another day? We got a lot more to talk about.
I'd be glad to. I appreciate you having me on the show, Jim.
I enjoyed having you here. Dr. James Harder, ladies and gentlemen, the co-author of 12, The Elements of Great Management. It's available wherever books are sold, right, James?
That's correct.
All right. Thank you very much. Stand by, folks. I'll be right back. 29 after. Stay with me.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.